Well, thank you everybody for letting us join you or for joining us or for whatever directionality makes sense in this context. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the Queering Our Campus initiative. First and foremost, Happy Trans Awareness Week. Friday today starts the week of trans awareness, which culminates in Trans Day of Remembrance, which is next week. And so the timing is particularly fortuitous for all of us to gather to talk through this. We're gonna do a little bit of an introduction and an overview of the project, and then we're hoping to present some quick tips that you could start in your class next week if you wanted to, depending on how much time we have. I know that Heather has a countdown clock that is already ticking, so we're gonna try and be mindful of that. So I wanted to start just by giving an overview of what the phrase queering our campus means, because it's not a term that is always used, and it's not a term that is always immediately understood. So when Kyungmi and I put together this proposal, we were thinking about the ways in which our campus and our college in particular sometimes unintentionally upholds certain hierarchies and certain power imbalances. And what it means to queer something is to trouble those hierarchies, to think critically and consciously about the power that is in place, to think about the dynamics that are always circulating around us, and thinking about what we can do to trouble that, to make that more capacious, to make that more inclusive, to make that a little less stable and a little more interesting for those of us who don't necessarily fit into the norms of our society. And as we start to think about ourselves with any kind of critical awareness, we realize almost none of us fit into all of the norms of our society. And so by queering our campus, by troubling those things that we may take for granted, we're able to benefit everyone. And when I say everyone, I don't just mean benefiting our students. I do think that queering our campus benefits our students. I think looking critically at our syllabi, at our policies, at our practices, I do think that helps our students. But I also think that helps us. I think that helps me as a professor be my whole self in the classroom. I think it helps our staff, our administrators. It helps everyone fully and truly be who they are. And so when we think about queering our campus, we think about troubling the assumptions that we make. In our kind of discussion, we're talking about those assumptions in terms of gender and sexuality. Everyone on this call is brilliant. Everyone on this call is already thinking, yes, of course. And let's also trouble our assumptions about other things. And like, yes, I think that is a beautiful thing that we should be looking to. We should be thinking about disability. We should be thinking about race. We should be thinking about class. We should be thinking about national origin. We should be thinking about religion, of course. And so I'm hoping that this conversation and this program gets us in a place where we're all thinking really explicitly about what assumptions are already baked into the way we move through the world and the way that we structure our environments, and how we could trouble those assumptions to make them more capacious and inclusive. We're going to do a very quick introduction. I'm Robert Marks. I use he, him, his pronouns. I am an assistant professor in child and adolescent development. And I have been, I want to say on campus, but that doesn't really make sense. I've been with the college for the last year and a half. Kyungmi, will you?
Yeah, that was nice introduction. Thank you, Robert. My name is Kyungmi Che, associate professor in counselor education, and this is my second year as well. And I'm originally from South Korea. Maybe we can share a little bit about our research agenda as well, because it's really close to what we have done and our passion about work and serving students as well. My research focuses on multicultural counseling, especially culturally sensitive, developing and exploring culturally sensitive counseling interventions and teaching approaches. And one of the areas I have been doing is really supporting and providing resources for international students, especially international students of LGBTQ population. And they are from very different cultural backgrounds. So how they understand themselves and explore their identity is really complex. And what I have done is, it has been about 5 or 6 years I've been working with the other counselors, educators, and student affairs professionals to come together and talk about how can we support international students, but also specifically LGBTQ populations. And then I would love to work with actually my partner, who's from Netherlands, I'm from South Korea, and other these collaborators from India, Canada, and also Malaysia. So we said, okay, let's create some place, claim space that we can actually accumulate and disseminate those information and resources to others. And my partner works for Flipboard, which is amazing virtual tool app that actually you can curate a magazine and share the information with others without really sharing your identity. So this is great. Let's do that. So we curate this magazine, International Safe Zone. I'm gonna share that in chat box. And we curate articles and news from all around the world. And not just curating this, but we went to different UC, CSU campuses and different countries, South Korea, Canada, and kind of present the special unique needs of this population from diverse background and who are exploring their sexual identity and gender identity. So that's how I started this work. And then last year, I went to the new faculty orientation. I met this wonderful person, like coming to me and share like all his passion and talk about his research ideas. And we are like, oh, this is great. Let's do something together. So we actually last year, we worked with the ISSS on campus, which is International Student and Scholar Services. So we went to their orientation. We actually provided a workshop about relationship and how to support international students. And that was great. And you can see the information actually Brian helped me to create this webpage to put our work there. And then we realized that this is not easy because some students feel uncomfortable to come to workshop because they are very afraid to be out and just talking about these very sensitive topics. So we have been creating these videos to even reach out. And then I met Heather and talking about this work. And Heather, do you remember you said, claim your space? I said, yeah, that's what I need to do. So we did Brian, he's a wonderful help. We have been working together and generating more resources and claim space under our website and creating this webpage to share more information and reach out to students. Brian, Robert, you have more to add, right?
I was just going to say, when I think about the partnership that I found with Kyungmi, I feel we like very instantly, immediately connected on a number of different levels. My husband is from South Africa and I grew up in America. And so we also have that cross-cultural relationship vibe. I studied abroad in college, which was where I really like explored my identity and learned more about what it meant to be a queer man. And so we had a lot of kind of overlapping interests. And so I just felt really lucky that the college created so many different ways for us to collaborate, to work together, to plug in these different ideas. And so we started, as Kyungmi said, doing some work with the International Students and Scholars Support Center and loved that. And then Heather put out the call for the strategic seed grant, and I saw it and thought like, oh, this would be like the great next step for what we want to do. And so Kyungmi and I partnered with a local organization, the LGBTQ Youth Space, and specifically their outreach coordinator, who also happens to be a student at SJSU, to put together an application for the Queering Our Campus project. And so I just wanted to give like a little overview of what that project looks like, and probably spend the most time thinking about like, how could y'all plug in? How could this work for you? How can you help us? So the program basically is a series of trainings that we'd like to run for the Lurie College family. That includes new faculty, that includes staff, that includes admin, that includes current faculty, that includes lecturers, tenure stream, tenured, everybody. If you're doing something on the college, we want to talk to you about how you can do it in a way that is sensitive and inclusive and supportive to our queer and trans students. And in thinking about what we wanted that to look like, we knew that we wanted student voice at kind of every step. And so our first step was that we created a survey for our SJSU students to give us some information about what it was like for them on campus. What is your experience on campus in classes like as an LGBTQ plus student? A survey, you say? I'd love to disseminate a survey to my students. Well, thank you for asking. I just put the link to the Google form in the chat. If you're thinking, oh, I wish that my students' voices could be heard, feel free to email this out. I also have a form IRB letter, if you'd like me to send that as well, that I'm more than happy to send, that basically says like, hey, two researchers are doing this work, it's all confidential, blah, blah, blah. And we've been collecting student voices to get a sense of what their experiences are like on campus. In addition, we're running interviews and focus groups with students who expressed interest. And these are LGBTQ students from all over campus, just to get a sense of what is your experience like and what do you wish your professors knew? So I had an interview, for example, this morning with a young woman who's been at SJSU for 2 years. And she mentioned, for example, that issues of sexuality and gender have never come up in any of her classes. And as I talked with her more about that, we kind of untangled it and we got to the point where she finally said, well, I guess like we did talk about sexuality, but it was just an implied heterosexuality. We only really talked about like romantic attraction with straight people. And we talked about like sexuality identity development, but only for straight people and not even in those terms. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool, let's like put a pin in that for a second. Like, let's dream big. Let's vision out what you want a classroom to look like. What would that look like for you? And then she went on about all of this stuff that she wanted. And I thought, what a great way to harness what our students already know. Our students are brilliant, complex, interesting people who have ideas and who have really sometimes they have terrible ideas. I like do student surveys all the time and sometimes like, no, like you still have to do work in class. But a lot of their ideas are really meaningful and powerful and can shape our classrooms in really important ways. And so Kyungmi and I, with partnership from the LGBT space, plan to take all of this information, take all of these stories, take all of these lived experiences, take all these really important recommendations and distill them down into user-friendly, very practical trainings for our staff, faculty, family. Mm-hmm. Our plan is to run them in January before the start of the semester, but all plans kind of are a little loosey-goosey now in this new world in which we live. So we're very open to running trainings basically at any time. But what we really wanted was to make sure that this stuff is really practical. I've gotten lots and lots and lots and lots of onboarding and training and information coming in as new faculty. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots. And it's all so amazing. But while I was sitting through it, I was like internally panicking, thinking like, well, what does this actually mean that I do in my class? Like, what do I actually do now with this information? And so we didn't want to get into high level, like queer theory about what gender identity can and can't mean and like piecing all this apart and pulling us together. We want to be really practical. We want to be really concrete and say like, okay, here are four things you can do before the start of your class to make sure that your queer students feel more supported and included in your classroom. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the goals of the project. And I think Kyungmi is gonna share a little bit about what we've already found from the surveys.
Sure, yeah. So we have so far 34 responses from various majors across the campus, undergraduate students and graduate students, we send out this survey through LGBTQ listserv and also the Pride Center. And some of the individual departments we know and ask them to share with the students. So again, thank you for your support and collaboration. Please share this link with your students. We would love to have more data so that we can plan, design our training more meaningful and practical. So students, 34 students identified with a wide range of sexual and gender identities, asexual, pansexual, lesbian, queer, bisexual, and the age from 18 to 33. We're gonna share more information when we are doing training. However, this specialist student's comments really affirm and confirm that we needed this training, not only for students, but faculty, professors, faculty, and staff, staff members. And I'm gonna share just several comments from students. And that actually connect with some of the tips that we're gonna share. Many students actually mentioned that they are not out to their professors when they are out to their family and friends, friends in their lives. And the reason was somewhat clear in this survey. They said that one person said, sadly, almost never, no matter how many times I request that students and staff use the correct pronouns, it's quite hurtful that my gender is usually not acknowledged, respected, and supported by my peers and professors. And this theme is so frequent in this survey that the other person said, there are no gender neutral bathroom in this building I'm aware of. And the other person said, I need people to use my correct pronouns and not misgender me. This has not happened with the people at, this happened with the SJSU, especially professors. No matter how many times I gently, respectfully ask to be treated better, I'm not acknowledged. Even worse, now things are over Zoom. And then the other person said, here, so specific tips we asked, how can we make you feel more comfortable and supported in your classroom? And many people, many students say that the professor being welcome and use my name and pronouns correctly, even asking me for pronouns and leave the names. So it's clear that they really want to be acknowledged and respected, and especially using pronouns, especially in this space, virtual space, Zoom, you can see their name and you can ask them, or you actually share your pronouns. So you create norm, the inclusive norm that these people, they don't need to correct you all the time and feel not valued and respected by you. Right. So one thing I do actually, the first class in my any classes I'm teaching, what I do is talking a little bit about myself. I share my personal experience and also professional research and expertise, talking about myself, try to create the connection, but also share pronouns and even share a really brief video clip why it's important. And it's kind of interesting, some students, one extra particular student say that, why should I use pronouns? I have been always using him, him all the time. Like, why bother, right? This is so inconvenient. And that's exactly showing privilege, right? He doesn't need to think about it. However, there are students, they always thinking about whether they're gonna be respected, whether they're gonna be acknowledged, right? That create connection by using correct pronouns is so important. And I even share my own experience. I share this video clip. So create that norm in the beginning of my classroom. That's the first thing I do. How about Robert? What do you do?
Thank you for asking. It's almost like we had planned back and forth how we were gonna do this. Look at you. So we're now into the tips section. I don't know if that was clear. Kyungmi did it so seamlessly, you may not have noticed. And so one thing I really wanna highlight about what Kyungmi kind of just subtly said without making it clear was the importance of humanizing ourselves to our students. Like, we are people too. And in this Zoom world, it's even sometimes harder to humanize ourselves. So there are two more tips that I wanna share. One is around pronouns and one is around inclusive syllabi. When I think about pronouns, I worry that sometimes the message that people get is, okay, I need to ask everybody their pronouns the first day of class and just make it happen. And the problem with that is, if in your classroom you haven't already established that you're going to respect and honor people's pronouns, what you're really doing is saying like, hey, on the first day, will you out yourself and expose yourself for a little bit of microaggression and victimization and see how it feels? And so I think there are a lot of ways to get at that, to get at students' pronouns without creating a high stress environment. One thing that I do is that in my email signature, I have my pronouns there. I know that sounds like almost nothing, but it signals to students that you are someone who at the very least is aware that pronouns exist and that people use different pronouns. I also have always sent my students a getting to know you survey at the beginning of the semester. Like before the semester starts, I've just always done that. Before I was even really thinking about this kind of stuff, I'm always like, oh, is there anything I should know about you? What else? I just ask like normal things, I don't know. But in that, I also always make clear that I ask, what name do you want me to use? What pronouns do you want me to use? And I want to signal to students that I'm already thinking about that. And this helps we could talk about UDL, Universal Design for Learning, for as much as we want to, but we're all in ed, we all know this stuff. But like, this helps all of our students. I have students who go by their middle names because that's what they want to go by. I have students who go by a name that they have chosen for themselves that is totally irrespective of their gender identity. It's just a name that they have chosen. Cool. I want to call you the right name too. I want to call everybody the right name. And so I ask students, what name do you want me to use? How do I pronounce that? Students almost never give me the pronunciation clues. And I'm like, come on, you help me here. And I ask what pronouns they want to use. And I make sure that I'm signaling from the very outset that I care about what your pronouns are. The situation that creates is that creates a responsibility on my part to then follow through. Once I know what someone's pronouns are, I need to be using them. Because if I don't use them, I'm signaling to them that they do not matter to me and that the way that they choose to exist in the world and the way that they live their lives is not important to me. In the same way that if you constantly tell me that your name is not pronounced that way and I just ignore it, that sends you a message. This does a very similar message for our students. And so it's really important that we create an environment in which students feel empowered to share their pronouns and feel supported and safe knowing that their pronouns will then be respected. You can't just ask people their pronouns and then disregard them, because in some ways that may be potentially worse. That almost shows a negligence or a lack of care and concern. When I was teaching in the real space, my first class, I used to have everybody make a name tag with their name and their pronouns on it. And then I would keep the name tags because I used to teach high school, and so I know that people lose things and it's just like easier if they're in my hands. I no longer teach in the real, I no longer teach in a world where I can hand out construction paper and markers. And so we now live in a Zoom world. And my first slide of my PowerPoint says, while we're waiting for class to get started, could you please rename yourself with your name, the name you want us to call you, and your pronouns? And I say, like, to rename yourself, click the three dots at the top, because like people don't know. I didn't know. And so I try to make a point of every class mentioning, remember, update your name and pronouns. And just a quick complaint is that Zoom has lost the ability to save your pronouns. I have complained to Jennifer Red. I hope other people are complaining to Jennifer Red. Please complain to Jennifer Red and like get it up the chain because it sucks. But remembering to update your name and your pronouns at the beginning of every class and centering that. And for me, that's so important because when we switched from in-person to online education last semester, I had a student who I loved and respected and like always knew the right answer to the point where I was like, I'm not calling on you right now because we know you know. Let's like let other people get involved. And they went completely silent when we went on Zoom. And after the first class, it was super noticeable to me. So I reached out to them and I said like, hey, just checking in. And they said, I no longer want to speak in class because I'm worried that I'll say something and then someone else will refer to me and use the wrong pronouns. And that, once they said that, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. Because we're all like, we rarely have our video on, we rarely know who's actually talking. And so of course you don't necessarily want to talk in class because then someone else is gonna be like, oh, I really liked what she said. And then you sit there in this moment. My next quick thing is when that happens, and it will happen, we know their pronouns and we are in a situation of power. And so it is incumbent upon us to quickly correct. I think you mean they. Keep moving. That is all. We are also going to make mistakes with our students' pronouns. I wish we didn't. I wish we could immediately just like flip our switch. But we can't, and we're going to make mistakes, and we need to be self-confident enough to say, oh, I meant they, sorry, please continue. Heather in the chat points out that there's also this new world in which students are often living at home again, or engaging in academic pursuits at home. And we have to think about how we talk to our students and how we honor their experiences. I have students who have told me like, hey, I use these pronouns. Please use these pronouns when you're talking to me in class. Please let people use whatever pronouns they want. I don't want to deal with that. Or I don't want my parents to overhear or whatever. So again, it's recognized that all of our students are whole people and are living whole lives, and we need to be there to support and include them as best we can. Our third tip is going to be very, very quick. And again, I think it's something that we all know, but that maybe we're not, that I'm not doing a good enough job about. So like mostly this tip is for me, which is good because Zoom, I'm looking at myself anyway. So I'm just going to talk to myself. Robert, I think it's useful for you to really look at your syllabi and make sure that they are inclusive. Well, what do you mean by inclusive, Robert? Well, thank you for asking, Robert. I mean, including diverse voices whenever it is possible. And this, I think, is not like earth-shaking or groundbreaking to anyone. We know that we need to be citing scholars of color. We know that we need to be citing women scholars who are doing this work and need to be included. But I also need to remind myself, when I talk about certain topics, I need to think about what examples I'm drawing from. Even so, I teach a class on program evaluation. We don't talk about sexuality or gender really at all, for the most part. We talk about like how you would evaluate a nonprofit program to know if they're doing the right thing. But I can be skillful and thoughtful, and I can pick examples. When we look at a program, I could look at a program that's focused on queer youth. I could also look at a program that is focused on celebrating Black joy, hashtag Bettina Love. Like, I could be pulling diverse examples. I could be talking about Crip Camp on Netflix. I could be pulling a variety of sources to make sure that I'm being inclusive and to make sure that I'm not talking about everybody being the same. We talk about families all the time. And I hope when we talk about it, we've gotten to the point where we say like parent or guardian. Like we've gotten a little bit better about that. But it's important that when we talk about families in our classrooms, that we recognize that families look all different ways right now, especially like right now. But the idea that we have students who are raised by their grandparents, we have students who are raised by queer parents, we have students who are raised by one parent, we have students who are raised in a variety of situations. And when all of our examples only adhere to one norm, we're unintentionally sending a message. And I know, like, part of this, everyone knows this. And so I'm like reminding myself, like, when I casually talk about people, I need to make sure to go out of my way to think about the diversity of human experience and try and center everybody at some point in my classroom. And so I literally like go through my syllabus, and not in some kind of like tokenizing crappy way, but in a way that's like, who wrote this article? Who wrote this article? Who wrote this? Like, whose voices matter? Who's talking about experiences? When we talk about disability in our classrooms, are we having disabled scholars write those articles? Or are we listening to already hierarchically valued voices? You know what I mean. You all know all of this. I think that was the end of our tips, Kyungmi. Is that correct?
Yes, and we have way more examples and mistakes we made. And so training, our hope is not to make everything perfect and correct and policing you whether you are doing or not. It's not like that, right? It's the cultural humility I would like to promote, right? We make mistakes, but be open. And I want to echo what you actually said. Our students, they have so much wisdom, so much life, lived experiences, and they can teach us. They can teach us what support them, how to make inclusive classroom and campus they want to work and study. So hopefully we can create a space for all of us to learn and grow from that training.